There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times.
This episode of Right Lane is sponsored by the Scripps Howard Awards. The Scripps Howard Foundation and Right Lane are collaborating to spotlight some of the best journalism of 2019. The awards show will be April 16th in Cincinnati. In the weeks ahead, we'll talk with some of the Scripps winners on this podcast.
So today's topic, murder your darlings. Joining us on the podcast today is Roy Peter Clark, the author of the book with that title. It's his latest, and if you're smart, you've already picked up at least one of Roy's earlier books. He's written or edited 19 of them, six in the last 12 years. And he's much more productive than we are, Lane. You'll probably want to add this to your collection. Roy offers great advice for making you a stronger reporter, editor, and writer. He is still teaching at the Poynter Institute. Before that, he was a writing coach at the St. Petersburg Times. Lane and I have been remiss in not getting him on the podcast before now, so we're glad to fix that. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So let's talk about this book.
Yeah.
What'd you do here?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I was getting a manicure one time.
This is an interesting segue.
And from a woman, Jane, who has known the family for a long time. And she said to me, Karen said that you've got a new book out. I said, yeah. She says, what's it called? I said, Murder Your Darling. She says, I love Agatha Christie.
Yeah, that's not this.
So it's no. The subtitle is And Other Gentle Writing Advice from Aristotle to Zinsser. And if you think about it, Aristotle to Zinsser. Okay, so I'm playing the A to Z trope. Ben Yagoda, the who writes beautifully about writing, I told him if it wasn't for Bill Zinsser, it would have been Aristotle to Yagoda. But fortunately, I had the A man and the Z man. But Aristotle is about writing about he's 300 BC. Zinsser passed away a couple of years ago. So it's essentially 2,300 years of people trying to figure out
how to write,
how this works, reading, writing, storytelling, making meaning, finding an audience, finding your voice. And so when I was kind of looking for an idea, I bumped into an old episode of Seinfeld. We're one of those families where if you don't quote Seinfeld once a day, you know, they want to take away your family card. And in one episode, Kramer, the crazy man, he has one great literary success. He writes a coffee table book about coffee tables.
And it looks like a coffee table.
And the book has these little legs that fold down. Creates a little. And he's at one place he says, "Yeah, I sold the film rights." That's a good joke. So I said, "Well, Kramer could write a coffee table book about coffee tables. Maybe I could write a writing book. Wait for it, about writing books." And so that's what we have here. In a way, I'm paying back the authors of about 50 books on writing and language and journalism for the things that they taught me. But something else that's going on, at the very end, just before I handed in the final manuscript. I was blessed by this note I got from Paul Kramer, who is a historian at Vanderbilt, is a fantastic writer. He said to me, you know, in the largest sense, you're hosting what's likely to be the liveliest gathering of word nerds history has ever assembled. and when he said that to me, I literally had these dreams of like Aristotle coming to life and meeting Kurt Vonnegut and having a conversation, you know, about something. So that's what the book is about. Each chapter tries to describe an important writing lesson that I learned or someone I know very well learned from these particular books. So I'm paying back what I owe these authors.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Lane, but I think this is the first reference to Kramer from Seinfeld on this podcast, and it may also be the first reference to Aristotle.
I was just going
to
say, I don't think we've hosted Aristotle in this either.
So, you know, listening to you talk about that, though, it's sort of intimidating, right, to think that for 2,000 years people have been trying to figure out how to write. Good luck with that now, people.
A high school teacher, I work with high school teachers and public school language arts teachers who I think are heroes. And they're champions. In fact, the book is dedicated to both, I want to say this because it'll reveal my passion and my strongest feelings. So this book is devoted to all reading and writing teachers, especially in public schools, to all journalists who speak truth to power in the public interest. You deserve medals as champions of literacy and democracy. Thank you for your service. And I say that to three of you as well. My thing is I try to learn something new about the craft every day. High school teachers said, what we're always looking for are mentor texts. Mentor text is their technical word for a little piece of writing of indeterminate length, which not only communicates its message, but it kind of reveals, if you look hard enough, how it's created. So you read it and you not only can learn about love, but you can learn about the structure of a sonnet. You can kind of, I call it x-ray reading, where you look down beneath the surface of the text. So I like to take this, my favorite example is a Shakespeare line, which you've probably heard me talk about before, but it's so interesting and so effective, where Lady Macbeth dies and there's a scream off stage and a messenger walks up to Macbeth and says, "The queen, my lord, is dead." And my daughter Allison was in a version of Macbeth, a Halloween version of Macbeth, the Georgia Shakespeare. And I heard this line. It was like this weird, like, visitation from Shakespeare. It says, "Listen to the line, stupid, listen to it, read it again." And I realized that he had written it in a way that I would not have written it. That he wrote, "The queen, my lord, is dead," where I would have written, "The queen is dead, my lord." And what's the difference? Oh, it's like all the difference in the world, it turns out, because he takes the least emphatic word, Lord, and he tucks it in the middle, and he places the most emphatic word at the end. "The queen, my lord, is dead." Period. Full stop. Drop the mic. Whereas what I did, "The queen is dead, my lord," I take the most emphatic word and I hide it in the middle of the sentence, and I take the least emphatic word and I put it at the end. So I said to myself, man, you've just discovered, you know, the best writing tool of all time. Emphatic word order, place the most emphatic word in a sentence at the end. Yeah, until I read, someone referred me to 2,000 years ago to a Roman orator and teacher named Quintilian, to whom I devote a chapter in the book, where he says to orators, he says, you know, you might be tempted very often. You may find that you have a good word or phrase or image, and but it's hiding in the middle of a sentence or a paragraph. And if you just bring it out to the end, you know, it'll have much more effect. So what I thought I had invented is at least 2,000 years old. So
Shakespeare probably stole it from Quintilian, right?
I think it's interesting because I think we all have this in common that we are still learning, always still trying to learn and take something away from, you know, you read something, you find some piece of advice. I mean, you're every day, like just even in conversation with Lane, I mean, we just talking over a story and why things work or why they don't work. And I think one of the things you're pushing people to think about with this book and others of yours is just, you know, you can get better at this. This mm-hmm. is like building up muscles. This is like, you know, studying what you're doing and looking at the patterns you're doing and kind of, and one of the things you do in this book is you give people lessons like, hey, go do this, go try to do this thing now and see, you know, put this into practice.
So there's a book, we have a bookstore in town. Have you been to the Tyrone Mall lately? Anybody go to the mall anymore?
321 Books?
321.
I know. You want to put a little ad for 321 Books?
Yeah, yeah. And one of the cool things, so it's, you can buy a $3 for hardcover, $2 for paperback, and I think for kids it's like $1, right? But sadly, some colleges, universities are, they're getting rid of their libraries. And so 321 has these stacks and stacks of old library books, and I purchased I found some amazing treasures there, and there's one I want to refer to. It's quite astonishing to me. It's called Fables of Identity: Studies in Poetic Mythology, which sounds kind of overblown and sort of academic. But the lesson,
I was going to say, I'm not even sure who stops at that book, but would you have stopped at that book?
No, I would have left that on the shelf.
But Roy, you thought there was something in there.
Well, I knew a guy from Canada who thought he was Northrop Frye's illegitimate son. I'm not kidding.
Hello.
It's personal now.
Oh, I see. Oh, that guy.
So here's the lesson that I drew out of this. He says that everybody reads a book. Story. Everybody reads a story two times. I said, well, no, I don't do that. But what he was saying was, everybody reads a story sequentially. My wife and I are watching The Outsider, the HBO series. And so we're waiting for the next episode. Why? Because we need to know what's going to happen next. We're dying to know. And so we go in, and whatever the story is, let's say Goldfinger by James Bond. This happens, this happens, this happens. Right? And at some point, we kind of start to predict how it's going to turn out. And sometimes that prediction is fulfilled and sometimes not. But he says, but we read it again, he said, in our memories. And when we read it in our memories, we're not inclined to think about it sequentially. We think about it in a completely different way. And the words that we have to describe what that way is are things like theme, archetype, premise, myth, nut graph in journalism. What is the nut graph? It's that attempt to break out of the linear sequence and to say, you know, so I know at some point in Goldfinger, Goldfinger, the villain, has got James Bond on a metal table and is aiming a laser up between his legs or things like that. So, I mean, I remember that as an episode, but in terms of where it falls, it no longer matters. What I'm thinking now is just like how cool this guy is and what a great adventure it was, and I can't wait to see the next one. So I think writers don't, sometimes storytellers don't attend to that in ways that they might or could because they're so focused on relating the sequential narrative that the other elements, what are people going to remember? What are people going to get out of this? I think all of us as writers, no matter what we're writing, I need to think more about that. And so that book, which is actually a new book for me, sort of pinned that down. So I knew I wanted to include.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Include it.
How did you have something new to say after 19 books about writing?
Well, it's because of my, I don't often use this word, but it's because of my asymptote.
I don't think we've had that word on the podcast either.
We definitely not had. In fact, when I was reading this and I got to that word, I wasn't even sure how to pronounce it. So I'm glad that Roy pronounced it.
So,
and he can use it in a sentence, which, yeah.
So my daughter, Lauren, who is a math tutor at St. Pete College, was the only other person in my family. She knew what an asymptote was, and she drew it. She drew it on a little chart. So it's pretty easy. And I bumped into it. Another writer who talked about his asymptote, and is somebody going to kick me in the asymptote before this is all right? So if you think about a graph. Right? A mathematical graph. And you think about, and you draw a vertical line. And then you draw a curved line. There are some curved lines that mathematically get closer and closer and closer to that vertical line, but they never reach it to infinity. Why? Because that distance, you take that distance and you can reduce it by half, by half, by half, to infinity. So in mathematical terms, it's something that approaches something else, but never attains it. So as a personal goal or ideal, it's like saying, I want to create a nation of writers, you know, which was the introduction to my book, Writing Tools. How's that going to work out for me? However, if you hold it up as this ideal that you know you can never reach, but you could always get closer to it, it's motivating. And so it is this notion that every single day, I want to learn something new about my craft. So I just bought a book the other day by the woman who created the series Fleabag. Mm-hmm. Phoebe Waller.
Yes, I can't remember her last name now, too, but yes.
What I discovered in the bookstore was that that series, the screenplay that she had written, it's called Fleabag, The Scriptures. And I had never read a screenplay of like a television series in as much detail as she's sort of writing. So, I mean, this is like brand new genre for me in terms of how to create it and how to work, you know, from the sort of the inside out. So if you're looking to learn, my goal is to learn. And then once I learn, my goal is then to share. And
you're still learning.
Still learning, still sharing.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Just thank to you. Give her mm-hmm. yes, but that's because, and that's a different, you know, it's not it, typically you would think, oh, well, you come from a journalism background, so you're looking for journalism books, but it is fun to discover inspiration in people who write screenplays and people who make movies, people who songwrite. We've talked a lot about different ways to find
yeah.
that.
Who do you see as the audience for this book, or who do you want, hope is the audience?
You know, I gave a little writing workshop at a brand new bookstore in town, St. Pete, Tombolo. And it was on a, it was 6:30 on a Wednesday night. And a little, it's a cozy bookstore. And I said to her, I said to the owner, Alsace. Her name is great lover of names, as we all are, I think. Alsace Valentine, like Valentine with a W. I said to her, every day is Valentine's Day, right? At Tumbelow Books. And she said, it's going to be a full house. And it turned out, I don't know, there were like 50 or 60 people there. And what was so interesting was that when I signed a few books afterwards, I always ask them, well, what's your name? How do you spell it? What do you do? And one person said, I've just retired. I'm an emergency room nurse. And I said, wow. I said, I bet you've got some stories to tell. And she said, I'm thinking about it. I wonder if you guys had the same experience that I had. When I was growing up, there were people, we were all expected, right? We were all expected to read. If we couldn't read, we were impaired. And so we were encouraged to improve our reading skills. And we knew that as a social literacy, reading would help us be better students, getting to, be better on the job. And as citizens, if we ever wanted to express ourselves that way. But writing was funny. Writing was considered something more refined and singular. So sometimes a teacher would go up and say, Lane, you could be a writer. And of course, we writers saying, oh, well, thank you. But now I'm thinking, all right, what about the other 34 kids in the class? Why can't they be writers too? And so one of the expressions of my mission, both in schools and in the professions, is to say to people, look, my name is Roy Clark, and I'm a golfer. I also happen to be a musician. But guess what? I'm not Tiger Woods, and I'm not Jimi Hendrix. But because I do these things, I feel like I can identify as a golfer or a musician. And you don't need to be, the scarecrow on The Wizard of Oz. You don't need a credential to be called a writer. Simply by getting out your little spiral notebook and, a page a day is a book a year, whatever it happens to be, you can be part of this community. And most people opt out very early in life in terms of literacy in general. So I think I think that's not good for them, and it's certainly not good for the society as a whole. So I have the broadest definition of who a writer can be, and want to help anybody who wants to step inside the circle. There's no wall.
So the book's for everyone.
It is. I'm really impressed at some of the names I had never heard. Mm-hmm. Some of the people that you found on a bookshelf or in your home, because you must have an enormous library. It seems like a nice collection of reference points and different like people you just don't come across
and
very often.
And each chapter has a lesson, like a spelled out lesson. So if you are a teacher or an educator, that's a wonderful take home for to send with your students. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, try to make it as practical as possible. So chapter 2 is devoted to Mr. Zinser. Now, Bill Zinser passed away about 2 or 3 years ago at the age of, say, about 92 or 93. I wrote an essay about him when he turned 90. I met him, met him when he was about 60 years old, and he'd published the book On Writing Well, which sold a million copies over 30 years. And as I was kind of coming up, I wrote this essay saying, man, no matter how much I try, I keep eating this old guy's dust. You know, he just beats me to the finish line. I go to Amazon. My book's like number 3 or 4 in running. He's always number 2 or number 1 with like Strunk and White, you know. And so I get a phone call, and it's Bill Zinsser. Okay, so Bill Zinsser now is 91 years old. He's living in his apartment in Manhattan, where he was a well-known editor. And students, he was blind, okay? And students would come to him and to talk about their writing. And then, and he said, I can talk to you for about 15 minutes before my tutor arrives. And I thought, I didn't understand what he was saying. I thought, like, the person he was going to tutor, he was taking poetry lessons from a young tutor at the age of, like, 91. Talk about an asymptote, right? I mean, trying to learn something new. About. And the last thing he ever said to me, let's keep this mission going. Now, that's inspirational for me. But when you go to his book, on these two pages early in the book, I had memorized the number, but like, so let's say 16 and 17. What he does is he takes an earlier version of those two pages, like a 4th or 5th draft, and he demonstrates how many additional words he can eliminate from the text, what he calls clutter. So the example that is in my brain all the time is, here's a phrase where he wrote, you know, something like, the writer wants to keep the reader on the proper path, which I think is a perfectly good sentence. And I'd be hard-pressed to change or rise. But you see in the text that he's taken a pencil and he's crossed out proper. He says that to keep the reader on the path. In other words, he understood that path, if someone's on the path, unless they're on the wrong path, then you don't need proper. So that's what I mean, a combination of inspiration and practical advice to be able to learn how to see your own text in ways to identify the words that are not doing any useful work.
So carrying on the mission here. Mm-hmm. If you have a question for Roy or for Lane, or you want to suggest a podcast topic, please email it to us at writelane@tampabay.com. That's WRITELANE @tampabay.com. Or find us on our Facebook group. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Allison Graves. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.